to Sports Talk Radio.
With the first pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the Los Angeles Rams select Jared Goff, quarterback, California.
We are here for you, WRPR Rat Pack Radio. Come join the pack.
You're listening to WRPR Rat Pack Radio. Come join the pack. You're listening to Rat Pack Sports Show on WRPR Rat Pack Radio.
Blue, you're my boy!
A genius. A man who has a reputation to be the best at what he does.
You see, a man has to realize his limitations. You don't know me, and you don't know what I'm capable of.
That was a heck of an effort.
This house is a prison in the galaxy of this sucks.
Are you free enough?
This battle is over when I say it is over.
I will massacre you.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
Are you not entertained?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
That's how I roll.
Offensive foul!
Hello? You play to win the game.
There's a drive! Way back! It might be! It could be!
This is my favorite part coming up right now.
All right. Rat Pack Sports Show. We are back. We are live. Rat Pack Radio, WRPR. Streaming online, ratpacksports.com, and also the Rat Pack Radio WRPR app. We're in the building. Another week. Another Wednesday night, bring you the best there is in sports talk and entertainment. Live Rat Pack Sports Show, streaming on the Rat Pack Radio WRPR app. We're also on the TuneIn app. And you can find us on Podbean. Download our podcast on Podbean as well. You can find us on Spotify. And you can also download there as well. So we in the building, man. We are in the building, and after you know, a kind of dry you know, Wednesday, well, kind of a dry Tuesday and a Monday, actually. I mean, it really hadn't been much happening so far this week. Been got baseball, but as far as that, we've been kind of just, you know, chilling and waiting for, me personally, waiting for Wednesday night. So with that being said, we are here. So we got AEW going on the tubes. We'll have the hockey game as well happening. Let me see. So it has started. So it is on ESPN Plus. So this is important. So We'll be going back and forth between that and, wrestling. So let me get it over here to what is going. Let's get it over here to ESPN. I don't know why. I think it should be ESPN. Let's see. Kyrie. Let's get out of here. Go back. This is not doing what I wanted to do. Well, until I can find this thing on the channel here, this stupid remote control. Well, I get it figured out. Let's see, is it ESPN3? That's what I was watching. Yep. All right, so we got it there. We got it on ESPN3. First period, 3 minutes in, 0-0. And I'll tell you what, man. Me and Boss Hogg got in a little debate. You know, Boss Hogg is he's in Colorado, so he's an Avalanche fan. Oh, this stream is terrible. What is going on with this stream, bro? Okay, well, I guess it'll fix itself. But, yeah, but Boss Hogg is in Colorado. He's a huge Avalanche fan. And as soon as the game was over with, my man started running his mouth, bro, talking mad trash about, the Avalanche is gonna do to my Lightning. And I'm like, bruh, let me remind you that the Lightning are the two-time champs here. He's running his mouth and talking like, the Lightning are the ones that's trying to win their first cup in 20 years. Like, the roles are reversed. Like, we don't have no superstars on our team. Like, we don't have no great defenders on our team. And, like, we don't have the best goalie in the NHL over the last probably 4-5 years. So we didn't wager no money or nothing on this, but this is going to be a nice friendly competition here. Nice friendly competition between me and Boss Hogg. And luckily, by the time he gets on the air, this game more than likely will be close to being over with. So if the Lightning are winning, when he comes on, I'm gonna make him feel it a little bit. I'm gonna let him have it a little bit, you know, just in all good and fun. So but until then, we're gonna have Nicholas Lane on with us here. He should be calling in here in a few minutes. And then William Graves is going to join us at 9. He's going to join us at 9. So let's get Nicholas on now. Well, he'll be calling in here in a few minutes. We're going to try and go live as well on the video feed probably around about 9:30, 10 o'clock. We're going to try to, you know, go live on the video feed on Bucks Life and also Rat Pack Sports Show Facebook page. And hopefully get it going. So you know, Avs put on a little bit of heat. They putting on a little bit of heat at the beginning, but we always, you know, you're gonna get the best. This is the Stanley Cup Finals, and you're gonna get the best. It's the best of the best. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, it's all good. I'm not afraid of the Avs' best punch. I feel like the Lightning have taken a lot of teams' best punch here in the playoffs. The Maple Leafs, we took their best punch in 7 games. You know, the Hurricanes was it the Hurricanes or the Panthers? I think it's the Panthers. The Panthers were a little disappointing. That series to me was a little bit of a disappointment. I didn't think we would win the series. Oh, my God, what are they doing? I didn't think we would win the series that easily. And I thought it would be a lot tougher in that Panthers series. I actually did. I respect the crap out of the Panthers organization. And, you know, the Panthers have done a lot to build that group and build that team up to, you know, what they are right now. And a very respectable organization. But that series was a little bit of a letdown. Maybe the Lightning, maybe they just had everything clicking in that series and it just kind of made it look like, you know, what it was, but it was really just the Lightning just playing that great. I mean, anytime you can 4-0 sweep a team that's at full strength in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, that's a good deal. I mean, that's impressive. It's just because it's not supposed to go that way. You know what I'm saying? It's not, you know, in the playoffs, man, you look at it and I got mad respect for, you know, what these guys do on the hockey rink. And I said all the time that these guys are, you know, this championship, this winning the Stanley Cup is the hardest championship in all the sports to win. I don't care what sport is your favorite sport. There's nothing tougher than, you know, winning the Stanley Cup. You know, what these guys go through, you know, playing through injuries and just, you know, going all out, the physicality, kind of like football on skates, you know. These guys be going at each other, man. He should have took that shot right there. I think they're passing way too much. You don't have enough shots on goal, man. Just take the shot. Too much passing, bro. They finna get cute again. Here we go. They just being too cute. Lightning, you know, they want to pass the puck around, make 20 passes before somebody get a shot off. So I don't know what's up with that, man. They always do this. You're in a power play, and you don't put any pressure on the goaltender. You just, you know, ring around the roses and play monkey in the middle with the freaking puck. I can't stand that. I know this team's success over the last, you know, X amount of years is, you know, one of the things that's not being done in sports, period. But if there's one thing that I can say about my team that I don't like, is just they make too many passes. And it just, you know, you see a lot of teams score goals by just putting it on the net. You know, some goaltender might miss it, might get deflected off of somebody. You just never know. And Vasilevskiy gives up a goal. And he just put it on net. You know, it's one of them saves where Vasilevskiy should have made the save, but he just shot the puck at the net. Vasilevskiy misplaced the puck, and Colorado is up. We just waste a power play. I don't understand that. This is what the Lightning should be doing. Just put the puck on net. That's it. Just put it on net. That's, you know, one thing that I don't like about my team, man. And I'll be the first one to say it. I don't like that. Because I don't feel like they put enough pressure on the goaltenders at times when they need to. But I told you guys that we were going to get Nicholas Lane on with us here. He is on a little bit earlier than normal. My man got a softball game here coming up here. So he's on a little bit earlier with us to discuss some NBA and what we've seen so far in the finals. So let's bring him on in. What is going on, brother? Let me make sure he's on here.
Thank you for accommodating me tonight. It's great to be on again.
Oh, no problem, man. Anytime, brother. Anytime. Doesn't matter. You know, we do our accommodations. So,
well, I think the finals are not over till the fat lady sings, but it's game six, Clay. I think the Warriors are going to stomp them. In game six, I know Grant Williams is a little banged up. Marcus Smart is always banged up just the way he plays. Tatum has had some tough games in this series. And yeah, Curry and Draymond's had an awful series. But more, I believe, in the tank than the Celtics. The Celtics are kind of losing a lot of steam here.
Yeah, you know, watching this series, man, it's been a competitive series. You know, the games have been interesting. And I feel like watching this, you know, Boston definitely can play with these guys. They've shown they can. And I feel like at times, another goal. Wow. Too many turnovers in the zone, man. But I feel like Boston is kind of, you know, gave away a couple games here where they should have won. They just got sloppy in the second halves of these games and got too dependent on the three-point shot at times, especially in the games that they lost where they were that down just like a couple points with a few minutes left. And these dudes just going out there, they just jacking up threes, turning the ball over, jacking up threes, turning the ball over. And it's like, you know, they start playing this isolation basketball that – and normally, most of the time, when they start playing that isolation basketball, they get in trouble. And, you know, when the ball movement stops, you get yourselves in trouble. It make it easier for the defense to play somebody that's just dribbling the ball up at the top and not really doing anything with it. What have you seen, you know, in this series? Because, like I said, I think Golden State will win. I think we both predicted, you know, Golden State to win this series in about six.
I actually said Golden State in six.
Yeah, you did.
That's what I is what I felt, and I stand by it. The reason why you obviously don't want to play isolation basketball versus the Warriors, you know, Wiggins has it's taken him almost 10 years to finally see the part of he was this gifted defender on top of his athleticism when he was the number one overall pick. It just happened to be, you know, 8 years later that we see this complete well-rounded player. You put that on top of, obviously, Draymond and Clay when he can defend. Three pretty good defenders there. And Kevon Looney's obviously a really good rebounder with the minutes he gets. I just think the Celtics, outside of Tatum and Brown, they have to rely on them too much for a majority of their offense. Now, Derek White is capable. Marcus Smart is capable. And that's what got them on this giant winning streak to get into the playoffs and how they didn't lose a home game until the finals. I just think when you're too dependent on two guys, in today's NBA, it is enough to win because they're obviously in the finals, but against a pretty good defensive team where you don't have another player on the floor just absolutely smoking red hot, except for, Al Horford in game one. Yeah. Outside of that, the Celtics haven't had a smoking hot player outside of Tatum and Brown. And to me, I think the Celtics just don't have enough.
I agree with you on that, you know, having more than just two guys you rely on. But, you know, watching Boston, you know, they play better when everybody is, you know, getting involved and everybody is, you know, that when they're moving the ball around and just, you know, more passes, you get guys open looks. They have the people in place to shoot the ball and hit the shot when they're open. But the problem I see is when you got Brown and Tatum, they just both take turns and play an isolation ball late in the games. And these games are close games. Some of the games they've been up and let Golden State run them down and take the lead. So whatever they were doing that got them up, you know, stay with it and not get caught into late in the game, you know, resulting back to the isolation ball, because it hasn't worked at all in this series. Every game that they've won, it's been a team effort and everybody's, you know, doing their part. But I just haven't.
Well, to me, outside of Al Horford leading the Celtics in scoring in game one, I just haven't seen it. I mean, if Tatum and Brown need to give up the ball, you know, give up the ball to Robert Williams for a dunk. Give it up to Smart in the corner where he's a better corner shooter than a top-of-the-key shooter.
Agreed.
You know, give it to Derek White to drive the lane. I mean, there's other things they can do. Or Grant Williams for open shots. I mean, ask Milwaukee Bucks what happened in game seven, right?
Yeah.
So I just think that the Warriors, this specific Warriors team, is just too much. They're too good. And with Wiggins playing the way Wiggins is playing this series, it's really, you can have Steph not even hit a three-pointer and you win a game.
Yeah,
that's how good the Warriors can be, right?
That's a problem. That's a problem.
Hey, quoting how I like to say this, that's a problem. And Derek, I like how we're going with this on the show. And you see where I'm coming here is when Steph Curry can't make a three and you still lose by like 11 or 12.
Yeah, you're supposed to win.
Problem,
and,
right?
And that means that this series is over, right? It is over if you can't take advantage of a game where Curry has basically probably his worst shooting game of his career in the playoffs, and you still lose by 11 points. it is over at that point, and it's going to take a miracle for you to win this series, because Steph is not going to have that type of game again, and you allow Wiggins to gain confidence, and you allow Wiggins to realize that he could be that third guy. He's the third guy now.
He's certainly playing like it, because Draymond is not playing like that.
Well,
sure, he did against, you know, Draymond had a great series versus Denver. I think he had a pretty good series versus Memphis. And obviously, you know, it was a foregone conclusion. They were going to beat Dallas, of course.
Yeah.
But in this series, Wiggins has become that guy with Clay and Steph in order for the Warriors to be as dominant as they can be. They don't have to have Draymond or even Jordan Poole, for that matter. I mean, obviously, Jordan Poole had a fantastic game four, but or game three. It was one of the two. I think it was game three.
Yeah, game three.
But, you know, when you give that confidence to Andrew Wiggins, even if the Celtics win game six, I guarantee you they will not win game seven. There's going to be I just think it'd be a fluke in a way that the Warriors would play that bad in these two closeout games in order to lose this series. It would be almost as big of an upset when it comes to, you know, obviously when the Cavs beat the Warriors when LeBron was on the Cavs, right? So I feel like
yeah.
it would be as big of an upset because the Warriors are just that good.
Yeah, they are, man. And you know, Boston, you know, they've had a great season. They're in the NBA Finals. And there's a lot of people that felt like, you know, Boston could match up, which they have. They have shown that they can. But I'm going to go back to Wiggins. What we didn't realize was the defensive matchup with Wiggins on Tatum. When Wiggins is matched up on Tatum, he's giving Tatum some problems on offensively. He's giving Tatum a lot of problems. And at the end of the day, I think with Wiggins being able to play Tatum as well as he has, and Tatum, again, and I made this is part of the reason why I made the comment of, you know, isolation basketball, because outside of the maybe like two or three games, we're in the game six in this series, and Tatum has been very bad in two of the five games they played so far. He's had terrible numbers, scoring wise, shooting percentage wise, decision making, turnovers, and to me, the guy that has been more consistent on this team is Brown. But again, as you said earlier, between Brown and Tatum, there's too much isolation basketball going on, and it's like they're almost competing against, you know, each other to see who can score the most points playing one against five. It's not a good look. And the head coach over there, while he's done a great job, he's been outcoached, you know, in this finals by Steve Kerr. And a lot of that outcoaching has been him not really adjusting to how Golden State is defending Brown and Tatum.
Well, it seems to me that Kerr is adjusting well. His personnel is out there doing pretty good.
Yep.
The thing about Wiggins, to finish up on Wiggins, right? So we go from Wiggins being drafted number one overall, 2014 draft, I believe, gets traded for Kevin Love and goes to Minnesota. He shows all the offensive potential, all the athleticism potential, but yep. you know, the Timberwolves have been bad for a long time, and he hasn't really had anything to play for. So, yeah, he's going to be lapsed defensively. He's going to be just another guy out there that can score 20 points and do nothing else. And that's what he's been for a long time. Some reason that gave him that massive contract by Glenn Taylor, who is the owner of the, who used to be the owner of the Timberwolves at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets traded to Golden State because somehow Golden State got D'Angelo Russell, you know, for Kevin Durant. And it was kind of strange how they got him when Kevin Durant was going to leave the Warriors without any compensation. But somehow he agreed to a sign-and-trade, and that D'Angelo Russell trade chip got him Andrew Wiggins. And you put Andrew Wiggins in a winning situation, obviously in the finals, and we see what Andrew Wiggins was supposed to be coming out of the draft. You know, you talk about how he's given Tatum fits defensively, and Tatum's had a bad series, you know, for the most part, because Wiggins is about as tall as Tatum, close enough. They're close to the same body style or same weight, close to that. Wiggins hasn't had significant injuries in his career to, like, you know, blowing out knees or blowing out Achilles or, shoulder rotator cuff stuff that alters his way of being able to play basketball the way that he was, you know, that he is gifted. You're going to, when you're as engaged as he is now, you're going to get the best version of him.
Yeah.
And we've seen it front and center, not the entire playoffs, but say an eye-opener, what a winning culture can do for a player as talented as Andrew Wiggins is. He's always been talented, but he's never been a guy you want to give the key to the franchise to. He's been a guy that if you have stars and you pair him with them in the right situation, holy crap, you got something on your hands. And that's exactly what the Warriors have. They have Klay, they have Steph, they have Draymond, and then they have Jordan Poole, obviously. And now you got a Wiggins as a luxury? Oh, my gosh. No wonder why they're going to win the title.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like tipping the – it's like if you're kind of balanced as your starting five or starting five, and then all of a sudden one or two guys really tip the scales in your favor, well, to me, that's Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins in this series.
Yeah, and, you know, these last two games, for Golden State, you know, they were down 3. They were down 2-1. They won these last two games. And I will go on record to say that with the performance of Wiggins, if he don't perform the way he has in these last two games, especially last game, Golden State don't win. You know, we want to give, you know, Klay Thompson and Curry, you know, all the credit. Nobody's really, talking about Wiggins' impact. Dude, they don't win game five if Wiggins doesn't step up the way he did. There's no way they win game five. There's no way they win game five.
And they don't win game three without Jordan Poole.
Nope. So, you know, the reserve guys have done their job. We knew Golden State had the deeper bench. We knew that. We knew they had a deeper bench, so we knew those guys would, you know, be bigger contributors to them offensively than, you know, what Boston had. But you made another great point about Boston with Williams. In the last series, you know, he had some good games offensively, and he helped them offensively knock down some shots. And in this series, he's been MIA. I mean,
it just goes to the point of it's just too much Tatum and Brown.
Yeah,
Smart is throwing his body around, doing everything that he does. And now he's not 100%, right? Like Horford, outside of game one, hasn't really done a lot in this series. So to me, it's good. You can win with two stars in this league. You don't have to have three. Obviously, the Warriors have $130 million payroll. They're going to pay for it in luxury tax, but oh well, they're getting a title. But at the end of the day, in today's league, you still can win with two guys. And it has to be the right two guys. I think Boston has the right two guys. I don't think they need to trade one of them, or the series is going to make them blow up their team. That's not the case. We don't think that at all. But what we do think is that it's just too much of those two guys.
Yeah.
And they traded for Derek White at the deadline, and Derek White did play pretty good versus Miami, and he had some good moments, here and there in the series. But they need more guys involved, and that was part of their problem at the beginning of the season when, Marcus Smart famously said that we need myself involved, and otherwise we're going to be losing more games. And so it's obviously too late now. The Warriors are eventually going to win, whether it's game six or game seven. But, it's still been a good enough series. But, Derek, I want to ask you something to move on. There is a picture, OKC Airport, of GM Sam Presti and Jabari Smith Jr. hanging out at the airport. Are you scared?
Not scared. I mean, it is, it is the draft. I mean, but that means if that's happening, then that means where's OKC? The number two pick?
Yeah, the number two pick. Obviously, Orlando has one, so of course they can still take him.
But yeah.
I kind of wanted to give you some drama. Why don't you shake it in your boots a little bit?
Yeah, they're doing their homework, man. I mean, being the number two pick, there's always a chance that guy could drop to you. Obviously, if the Magic decide to go, somewhere else, okay. Not worried. Now, I would be worried if it was, OKC and they was like, fifth. And they, picture with this dude. That means something's happening. And they're more than likely going to pull off something to move up to grab this dude. But no, not nervous, but I want that to be my guy. I want that to be the guy. The Magic take. To me, the Magic can't mess this up. And if they don't take him, they messed it up. That's just how I feel.
Well, at the end of the day, the consensus has been a lot since we have talked about this, not too long ago, where we had that, awesome segment that the listeners should listen to, how we break down the top four in this draft, each team and what it means for them, is I have heard nothing else, but Jabari Smith is the consensus number one pick here. And it's not complicated unless you want to make it complicated, and that, you don't want the Magic to make it complicated for themselves and obviously fall for that potential card that obviously Chet Holmgren, gives any GM hope in that sense.
Yeah.
But, we talked about it in length, but Jabari Smith Jr. is the best player in this draft. He is the safest player in this draft, and I don't think he's a miss. I don't see it, unless he has, crazy injuries, I guess. But other than that, we have to assume that he is the consensus number one overall pick here, and if the Magic somehow don't pick him number one, then you're right. It is a loss. I think Paolo Banchero is awesome. I think he's going to be a good player, but he's not better than Jabari Smith Jr., I'll tell you that.
No.
So right now, you got to hope that the Magic are still going to pick the best player in the draft, and that's obviously Jabari Smith. You got to hope that the Magic don't fall into the whole potential trap, still build on the timeline. And I'm not saying the Magic are ready to win. It's more of like you want a better player to jumpstart the rebuild compared to being, a frisky team that's okay, that still needs time to develop. You want to be a team that once you are developed, you are winning, like the Memphis Grizzlies this year. And that's where, obviously, Jabari, no matter the fit, you can trade some guys if you need to, even if they're still pretty good, if you need to trade Jonathan Isaac, fine, you need to do it. But if Jabari Smith Jr. gives you a better ceiling later on down the road than a Jonathan Isaac or a Mo Wagner, Franz Wagner, then you make that trade. You move on and you put in the best players available. If you have to trade Markel Fultz, then you trade him. But right now, what I see is it's Jabari Smith or bust at the top of this draft class.
Yeah, I mean that's the guy they need. They have enough at the other positions. They have, you know, the guards. They have, you know, the point guards. They got the shooting guards. They have, you know, good depth everywhere else. They're just missing that size, and that guy would pretty much, you know, level that playing field out. Somebody that could be dominant, you know, for the next, you know, 10 years at his position and improve the team. So they can't mess this up, man. They have all of the, being the number one pick, there's nobody you're worried about taking your guy. So that better be your guy.
It better be. I do think we will have a flurry of moves, not maybe on the draft night, maybe it won't be as crazy, but I do think this offseason we will see, you know, quite a bit of movement of players. Obviously, OKC kicked it off, I believe, on Monday. They made a trade with the Denver Nuggets, where OKC sent the 30th pick and two future second-round picks to get the 34th pick and Jermichael Green. And Jermichael Green is going to opt into his deal. The Nuggets want to shave some money off the luxury tax. OKC is like, fine, we have $30 million in cap room. We can take them. We just want a future first that's going to be better than the 30th pick.
Yeah. And
obviously, it's 2027, so 5 years down the road, that's the maximum amount of years you can trade picks out to right now. I mean, obviously, after the start of the new year, it could be 2028. But for now, you know, they're going to get a better pick eventually down the road and take on an expiring contract to give them Derek Favors and Jermichael Green to package them and see what the Thunder can do with that. If they need to shed their salary or if they want to take on more salary and give expirings in return, then, you know, these moves are necessary moves to make. And, you know, if the Nuggets need to shave off that tax just to get off of Jermichael Green to move up a couple spots, then, you know, it's a good trade by OKC to make that.
Yeah, you know, OKC is another team that we've always talked about that made some good moves for the, you know, mortgaging now for the future after they, you know, pretty much went on their rebuilding path. And was it OKC ownership that told the fans that, hey, bear with us, we're rebuilding this team, we may lose a lot now, but we'll do the best we can to build the best team long term? Was that OKC management that said that, or was that another team that did that?
I would say that's more of an OKC thing to say. I mean, the GM, obviously Sam Presti, has made just move after move after move to make this work and to have it be pretty good for them. I would say that would be pretty accurate, because I think they're one of the few teams in the league that actually believe in, you got to be bad now to be a powerhouse later. You know, Memphis has a lot of their rise is because of their draft picks.
Yeah.
It's not really because of their trading. I mean, some of it is, some of it's not, but it's mainly because of their draft pick and how good they've worked out. Where a team like the Thunder are just, you know, we'll take on your bad contract. Well, I need a first round pick. hey, we'll take Al Horford, but I need a pretty good pick. They get a pretty good pick. All right, Boston, here he looks better. I'll take Kemba Walker, but I need a pick, right? So then you take on Kemba Walker. He obviously needs to be moved, and you buy him out. You essentially use a lot of your cap to buy him out for this season, or a good majority of it, and you let him walk. So at that point, you got the pick you wanted. They traded that pick into two other future picks, which one of them is the Wizards pick that they had to swap John Wall and Westbrook for. Yeah. So the Thunder owned that Wizards pick, actually, which will be not bad. It could be a potential lottery pick, because to me, the Wizards are just, they're not good.
No.
And Bradley Beal wants to sign a long-term deal, and he's going to stay there. It seems like that's what he wants to do. And, I mean, good luck to him, because I don't think they're going to be that good. I mean, unless Porzingis, comes out of a time machine and doesn't get hurt and dominates. Otherwise, the Wizards are not going to be good. So, to me, is it the small moves like this on Monday and more that they're going to do, consolidate picks, consolidate them to move up, consolidate them to get a future first and an expiring player. These are moves that teams should be making, but they don't want to. And, OKC has done them, and all of a sudden, they don't have a terrible roster. They have an all right roster. And now they have the number 2 pick and number 12. They could do whatever they want, maneuvering up and down the board. There's just a lot of things they can do. And I think it's just a testament of, if you scrape the salary cap, if you scrape trades, if you're consolidating picks, you're adding picks, all of that stuff combined to do the right things, taking risks on players like an Alexei Pokuševski, and all of a sudden you get 1 year where you hit in the lottery, right? You get the number 2 pick.
Yep.
So if the Magic screw up, for example, and all of a sudden you get a Jabari Smith, and you have all this treasure trove of picks next year, the year after, you have those Clippers picks from the Paul George trade, and it snowballs and cascades into, now all of a sudden you can package those guys into a star when you're ready to win. It could be anybody out there at that point. Devin Booker could be upset after Chris Paul retires, and all of a sudden Devin Booker's available. Okay, well, here's 4 first-round picks and a couple okay players, and we got a deal, right? Like, there's just things you can do when you have all that flexibility and get only – the only needed was 1 year of luck. They got it. They got the number 2 pick. And if they get a year of luck next year, then the roof could be blown off, I think, what they can do.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I agree with you on that.
I think players like Tobias Harris, players like Westbrook, they could be potentially on the chopping block in a deal. It could happen. Obviously, John Collins, Gobert, Clint Capella. I mean, the Hawks are trying to get Gobert pretty bad. They're trying to package 16 Clint Capella, Herder, and Collins into Gobert, which would be fantastic for the Hawks. To trade a bunch of, C-plus to B-minus players, maybe Collins is a B-plus, but into an A player like a Gobert. I think it would be fantastic for the Hawks to do that, and it wouldn't be an awful price for the Jazz, but if that's going to be one of their best offers, then, maybe that's what they need to do. Because I think if I were the Hawks at 16 – if you want to trade John Collins at 16 for number 7 to Portland, I think that's too much. I think you need to give up maybe a Capella and a Herder in 16, keep John Collins and put Collins in a different deal. But I don't think you should be only to trade up 9 spots in a 4-5 person draft. You should not give up the farm just to trade up 9 spots if you're the Hawks.
No, I think, there's some teams out there that paid the ultimate price for trading a farm for certain people. It's not a good strategy, and I would probably never do it. For anybody.
Well, the Clippers are seeing that.
Yeah. How many draft picks the Clippers got?
Well, they don't have anything now.
So they might as well just stay home. They might as well don't even look at any prospects. You don't even have the picks to draft anybody. So.
Well, there's breaking news. The Mavericks are trading Boban, Bogdanović, Sterling Brown, Trey Burke, Marquise Chris, and the 26th pick to the Rockets for Christian Wood. So the Mavs, the Mavs just consolidated a bunch of probably D-plus players.
Yeah.
Into probably a B-minus player, which is Christian Wood. But, hey, I'd rather have a B-minus player than a bunch of D-pluses.
Right about that. I'm right there with you, man.
So, Luka, Christian Wood can hit the three. He's kind of a selfish player. He's a good rebounder, not a good shot blocker. But if you're consolidating some players into a better player, you know, that's a way cheaper price than what they had to give up to get Porzingis and then what they gave out to get rid of Porzingis. I think it's a win for the Mavericks and the Rockets. It's they're already bad. They got bad players. What does it matter at that point? Trey Burke was pretty decent coming into the league. All he's shown that he's undersized, he's not fast enough, and that he only scores. So, to me, if that's the best player in that deal, then man, good job on the Mavericks. And the Rockets is that really the price of the 26th pick to get that and to maybe save a little bit of money in salary cap? It doesn't make any sense. They'll probably waive a couple of those guys. I mean, that part is fair because some of those guys shouldn't even be in the league anyway. But right now, at least the Mavs did a good trade. I'll give them that.
Yeah, they definitely made a good trade. I think they realized that they got to get a little bit more help, for Luka. Everything can't be revolved around, Luka. We've seen once they got into the conference finals. They lost in the second round. So once they got, in that series that they lost, if it ain't Luka, it ain't nothing. And you got to get them more help. You got to get them more guys that can make plays and more guys that can help take some of the strain off of Luka. He's a great player, but you're not going to beat anybody by yourself, not a good team.
Well, also at the end of the day, I mean, we look at that Warriors series, the Mavs, and we see Christian Wood made a big difference where they would have won an extra game? Probably not, but is he better than what they just got rid of? Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Yep.
So, go on Mavericks. They listened a little bit, and look what happens when you consolidate a bunch of players that don't really mean anything, and you get one. That's not bad. I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw your thing about LeBron. Before I'm going to go, I'm just going to touch on it real quick. He doesn't have to commit to the Lakers. I think he has one more year left to commit to them, and that's it. He can opt out and be a free agent at that point. And I think at this stage in his career, I wouldn't want Anthony Davis as my second best player. I'm sorry, I wouldn't.
Well,
if I were LeBron,
the one thing that I say about that, LeBron, they basically built this team for you. They built this team, you know, they brought you there to win championships. The core guys that they gave up for you to run the team the way you wanted to you know, be and have, you gave up about three or four All-Stars. So you sitting there saying, well, I'm not going to commit. I'm going to hold out. To me, that's like a slap in the face because everything they done was to cater to you. So now,
They don't even have a first. They don't have a first round pick until 2027. Now.
Exactly, because of him. I mean, if the Lakers would be a better team if they stayed with the group that they traded away, and just let LeBron go somewhere else.
And that group would have been, you know, Ingram, Ball, and Josh Hart. I mean, it would have been pretty decent. You know, now there's reports out there that Lonzo's, you know, issues with his knee are more grave than they first suspected. And that's going to be interesting of how the Bulls are going to handle what they're going to do with Lonzo Ball right now. I think they are still going to re-sign Zach LaVine, but you know, there's a couple of things that they might need to happen, and they might not be able to get off of Lonzo Ball if his knees are shot. So, that could be a little. As much as we like Lonzo on the show, that could be a little troubling.
Yeah, especially if it's one of them type of ailments where you're just trying to figure out a way how to get through with it. Opposed to it getting better over a stretch where there will be some improvement, or it's something where you're just dealing with it and trying to manage playing through it, and you got to be put on like some type of game count or minutes count or something like that, where you're a player like him. Limited, you're never going to get his full potential.
It's a shame because I think Lonzo's really good and he's improved significantly since he got drafted. So, you know, what I think for the show's sake, I think we will hope to see Lonzo get better and that we get to see, you know, how good he can be.
So, tell you what.
But I'm gonna go stretch and not blow a hamstring.
Oh yeah, we can't have you blowing the hamstring,
ready,
man.
Gonna be ready here.
All right, brother. Well, hey, appreciate you calling in early. Hey, have a great game, and don't pull any muscles. I don't want to see any messages in the group that you pulled the muscle or anything. You know, only Boss Hog is the only person that could. That could get himself hurt playing softball. So,
yeah. Well, thanks for accommodating me early. I appreciate that. And you guys have a great rest of your show. And we'll be talking to you soon. The NBA draft is in 8 days. So I think next Wednesday should be a good time to talk and be able to talk about it right up to the draft there.
Yep. All right, brother. Take it easy, and we'll catch you next week, man.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Rat Pack Sports Show NBA Insider, Mr. Nicholas Lane, giving us the lowdown on the NBA. And before we end this segment, I just had something to say off of what he was talking about, which was It had something to do with, just that fast. Let me think. It slipped my mind that quick. I should have got it out before he got off because it had something to do with what we had finished the conversation on as far as The Lakers. Oh, Lonzo. I was going to say that maybe he should, you know, talk to some of them other guys around the league, look at maybe some type of, you know, PRP or stem cell treatment to on his knees, where maybe there's not, you know, structurally, you know, serious. But usually I think Kobe might have had that done when he was going through his injuries, where he went over to Europe and had a specialist, you know, work on him. And I think he did some, you know, PRP treatment or stem cell. I forget the actual name for it, but and there's been some players I know that have done it in football, where it's basically, it's, you know, it's a harmless procedure, but it helps rejuvenate that area that has sustained injury or, you know, damage just from wear and tear. So maybe that's something he, you know, look into, that could get him back on the court playing to his potential. But he's definitely an asset for the Chicago Bulls. And, you know, it would suck to see him be limited at such a young age in his career, because of, you know, an ailment or something like that. You know, in the basketball sense, we've seen a lot of guys' careers end early on just not being able to stay on the court and stay healthy. So, yeah, so appreciate my man Nicholas Lane for calling in. We should have William Graves calling in. If my man Alarm Clock wakes him up, he'll be here. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back from the break, we'll get back into the Stanley Cup Finals. And I'm going to vent a little bit about the first period. So with that being said, we'll be back after this.